Are we ready?
Yes, we are.
You and I are. Okay. So happy to chat with you today, Johnny.
Thank you so much for watching this movie.
I really like this movie. I was so invested in this. It's very much a pay attention movie because for a big portion of it, we don't have much dialogue. It's very observational.
Yes.
As we're watching Josh's character of Guy go about whatever it is he's doing. And this is where what I really appreciate is your location becomes a character. So we're really watching the character of the location and Guy for a big part of the first 20 minutes. And I just got so invested at that point, there's no way I was ever going to look away from the screen.
That's so great. Thank you.
How did this story even come to you? I know it was written by Jim Agnew. I'm curious how it fell into your capable hands.
Well, I called up Jim and I said, hey, I think it's time that I do an action movie. I come from the action world and everyone wants me now to do that, where I've only done thrillers mainly. And because I was always afraid to do action because of the industry that we're in now. Mm-hmm. You don't have the time and luxury to put action to make it right. So I was hesitant and I said, you know, it's time that I do it. And I said, I got an idea. I said, what if I just watched John Wick, and I said, I don't want that. I don't want to have an actor be able to kill 200 people and to be so highly trained that he could shoot 150 guys in the same movie. I said, I want to do something where he never has a gun in his hand, and he always uses his brain. And I want him to look sloppy enough to where he doesn't know how to fight. He knows how to get out of a fight by what he's thinking. And it's very last-minute thoughts on everything other than the contraptions that we built. And he says, I'm in. And so he started writing, and I'd go to Home Depot and start throwing stuff in my cart and going, okay, what can make a great weapon? And I bought all this stuff. I'd go home, and I'd grab this fire extinguisher and pop out a hole and put a hose bib on it and then save, just test it slowly, see if a flame would really come out. So everything that you see in this movie was really tested. And I think at the end of the day, I'd call Josh up, and I'd send him the idea on video, and he'd send me an idea on video, and we would start doing all these testing together. And so we kind of designed every bit of this, of all the ideas. And I thought it'd be more entertaining that if I could stay in the emotion of the character. And that's why when you say it was, you know, that you don't see or hear a lot of dialogue in the beginning, because it was so important that I express loneliness, mm-hmm. what it would feel like to be alone, and how much pain it would cause somebody to do that, and to make sure that even if he could fall in love, he can't. He can't even talk to anyone. And that's why Maria needed to be way over the top, to where she was just so loving that you could not fall in love with her, mm-hmm. where he had to push himself away with no words, just with this look in his eye. And when I read that Josh was an off-the-grid kind of guy already in his homeland in Minnesota, that we wrote the script based on him. I told Jim, I said, watch these videos of Josh. This is our actor. And I said, we write it to this man. He will. And to me, it's always important when you cast a movie, not to cast a movie that an actor has to find a way to become that actor, but try to find, you know, habits or things the actor likes that he could relate to it. And that's mm-hmm. what I did with everyone. It's like Greg, you know, Greg has got his ups and downs like everyone. So why not make him a villain that he could have his ups and downs and still stay who everyone loves him with that smile on their face, but also make them feel a little dirty.
Yes, I thought your casting of Greg was perfect for that very reason. We don't get to see Greg be a bad guy. And here, he walks that line of ambiguity really well for the bulk of the film. You can tell he cares. Ranish cares about Guy. But he also cares about his own wallet and his own salvation. Yeah. So how do you draw the line? Where is that line in the sand or in the forest in Mississippi? Just so well done. And you knocked it out of the park when you brought in Michael as Chase. What a breath of fresh air he is.
I had 300 people read for that role, And when I saw Michael, I only asked one to read for me again, and it was him. And I didn't even ask him to read for me. I said, I just need an hour on the phone with you. Not 10 minutes. I need an hour. I need us to get bored together and to find out what our conversation would be like an hour into our talk. And I said, once I see who you truly are, and I'd ask him quick questions, you know, about himself and ask him about, you know, his, you know, what he does on his side and, you know, and his hobbies and all this stuff. And we were laughing and roaring. I go, this is the character. I said, you need to feel like you're 14 again. Mm-hmm. And he goes, well, I'm 22. And I said, no, you're not. I said, you're 14. I said, also shave that little bit of hair you have on your chest. I said, you can't shave your arms. We need to make you feel like you're 14 again. The audience needs to know what a small town feels like. And, you know, there are, you know, everyone pictures small town people that have an accent. And when you're in, you know, where we shot in the South, I said, no accents. I said, I don't want to be people to be typecasted as who they are. I just want to feel characters. And that's where Michael, I think, really brought this wholesomeness. And he was the only one that could get the guy character to actually talk. Because it drove someone that was so kind, and that you felt that he was in his own pain with his dad, that he needed Guy. And Guy wanted someone to talk to, and he trusted this kid, you know, and that's where he helps bring Marie into the movie.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Michael, just as Chase, such an endearing character, and to watch the relationship develop between Guy and Chase, that has such a natural, easy flow to it, Johnny. You let it breathe and you let it grow. And it preys on, it really rises on the fact that Chase is so innocent, very naive, very sheltered. And he's just so wide-eyed and so eager to engage with somebody else who is also typically very quiet and doesn't have friends. So I love how you let that grow, because that really becomes a sustaining factor in this storyline as we see where you take this story. Just really well done with the casting. And of course, Peter. You gotta have Peter as a bad guy. Got to.
Well, we had to. I wouldn't cast that role, and they wanted me to cast them, and they sent me tons of guys. I wouldn't even look at the videos, unfortunately, to all the people at Red. I'm sorry. I said, because Peter, I've known for a while. I've been attached to a few movies to direct through with him. That I begged Peter, and he'd say, "No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry." He kept apologizing. I'd call him 2 weeks later. He goes, "What?" I go, "Please, I'm begging you. Please, just come in for one day. One day is all I need. Just please." And he goes, "Oh, all right, I'll be there." He goes, "Can you get me out in a day?" I go, "Yes." And so we got there, and he goes, "Well, let's see all the." He goes, "You got a lot of dialogue." I said, "No." I go, "Greg, come in here." And Greg and him would sit down. I go, "Guys, we know what we have to say." I go, "Let's improv this thing. Let's just have fun and really go crazy. I'm going to roll the camera for 10 minutes. Let's just go off on the same kind of storyline to get what we need out of this thing, to find the best balance that we can. And Greg, be you, and Peter, be you." And they were. They were really, truly who they truly are together. And they're ripping each other. I wish I could share the outtakes of those.
Wow. Movies. Well, that means we've got to have a director's cut or a DVD Blu-ray with extras.
Sure hope so.
So much of this is shot in the forest, in the wooded area, there in Mississippi. This presents a logistic problem on its own with lighting, with camera. Luckily, most, I'd say, 90% of it is natural lighting that your cinematographers are using there. But talk to me about designing the visual grammar and how that location and the terrain affected the visual grammar and the look.
Well, it's funny because this movie was set to go to Italy, and we were ready for it, and I found a forest because Forrest was the star. It was number four on the call sheet to me. That forest was the star. So I found a certain forest. All forests would not work. Then all of a sudden we get moved to Spain. And I struggled to find the right forestry in Spain because the trees were very thin and they were too spread out. And I found a part of forestry there. And then I went. Then they said, "No, you got to go to Mississippi now." So I get to Mississippi. And believe it or not, that whole forest scene you see is maybe all of probably it's less than an eighth of a mile a square block in there, that I found a structure that I really liked with a creek, with levels, mountains, which Mississippi is usually flat,
yeah.
where I needed some rises and everything. And I needed it to be crowded, but not too dense, because I didn't want the forest to overtake the audience's dialogue, because once you have beauty around you, you also now are looking at the beauty and forgetting what the actors are saying. So
mm-hmm.
I needed to make sure that the shadows were perfect, right? So it's like 3D, you know, Josh pops out from the forestry, and the forestry isn't equal with Josh, to where, and we had to change Josh constantly as the sun moved and cheated, where we knew that it was all equal in that sense. And just to tell you about the forestry, it was so crazy that we had four snake wranglers, because throughout every shot, snakes were flying everywhere. And then we had ticks. We had chiggers. I got two chiggers in the stomach, and my body swelled up like a balloon. I was getting shots of steroids every day to walk.
Oh, my God.
And it was hard, hard shoot, because it was 110 degrees. And we had snakes going everywhere, and people would jump from the set, and in the background we'd hear guys screaming in the middle of a take, because there'd be a snake going past their legs. So and I made sure to stay in the dense forest with these guys. We never walked away from each other, and we just battled it out. And I think we got a really great balance where the forest doesn't overtake it, but yet you see, you know, the actual beauty of Mississippi, because Mississippi is really, really a beautiful state. It really is. Just stay away from the snakes.
Yeah, I've been through Mississippi before, and I've been all over the South, and it truly is. There are some beautiful, beautiful areas of Mississippi, and that's why this one, I think you shot in the Clinton area, is really nice.
What a great little town.
I mean, now, that small town, that town is so perfect. Did you have to build that up? Was all of that existing there? Did you use with what you had? Or did your production designer, did Adam, have to come in and with a crew and start building?
Well, Adam is my hero to begin with. I mean, what he did in this movie, I wish people could really appreciate. Like, the store was not a store. It was just an open room. And he built that store. The bar was an actual pizza place, but it wasn't a bar, and he built that whole bar.
Wow.
Everything he did was just genius. But Clinton is only like a two-block town, and everyone's giving me the locations of hell or high water, kind of look dry and dreary, and I'm like, believe it or not, small towns can be beautiful too. And when they showed me this brick street area of Clinton that was only a T-shaped town, I'm like, this is what, and if I had to leave the country or run away and be off the grid, I sure in the hell wouldn't pick a desert town. I'd pick somewhere where I could at least feel at home. And that was very important to me, that everywhere you feel like, when you go to Josh's cabin, it needed to feel like home. You know, it needed to mm-hmm. feel a presence of how he could put up with being alone every single day. You know, maybe his surroundings reminded him of his dad or whatever, and that's what we related it to, was his past life. And we do that with all actors. We set up a structure of how they were when they were kids in this character, and all the way through, and we try to develop the set design around their memories. Like, Josh's memory of what he thought the character was is in that cabin, believe it or not.
Wow. All of that, it's just fantastic. And the small town feel that you get, the purity, and that's one of the great things. You get a purity in the town, so that when it gets infiltrated, you get a striking balance of evil coming in. The bad guys really come across as evil. And just so well constructed, Johnny. So well constructed.
Thank you so much.
Got to ask you about how challenging was the edit here, because your edit, you build so much tension here, because first you build inquisitiveness as we're trying to find out who Guy is and where we are and why is he out there in the woods, in the forest. And then it becomes as little pieces as we cut back and forth with Ranish and Belcour. Little pieces start that there is, you know, something lurking, and tension starts building, and you keep building and building and building. So talk to me about working with your editor on this one and putting this together. How challenging was the edit to find that balance and do that tense build?
Well, Well, I think that Vincent, who's an amazing editor, and I thought he was going to get mad at me a bunch of times because we finally did the rough cut, and he says, "Well," and I said, "It's not right. There's something not right." And he goes, "What?" And I go, "I got to go." And I went and I drove for 3 hours and I go, "What was not right?" I was so disappointed. I was so depressed because it just wasn't what I had in my mind. And I went, came home to my girl and I said, "Something, I don't know what's wrong." And finally I went back to Vince. I said, "I think I got an idea." And we moved scenes that were at the end of the movie to the middle of the movie, scenes that were at the beginning and brought them to the end. And I moved like 8 scenes around because once you shoot a movie, you realize that the emotion of the actors are what drives the story straight. Mm-hmm. And so all of a sudden, if you have Greg being mean in this scene, and then he's likable in this scene, and the kid being kind but being scared, and then also being kind again, well, in the script it worked. But when you edit the movie together, the emotions need to follow each other. And so all of a sudden, I found Mikey being happy when he got threatened by Greg. It's like, no, we got to move that scene in front of this scene. And so we were constantly switching scenes, and there was a lot of issues doing that as well. And then when I finally got the movie where I'm like, this will entertain the audience. I know it will. I know it will be nonstop now. I go, but something's missing. And it took me and Vincent, I think, 3.5 weeks to figure out what was missing. And what was missing was that my movie started off, like you were saying, with very little dialogue to really no loneliness. I go, you know, there's a slow build to this movie. I go, we need a ticking clock to happen in this movie. I go, let me take a piece of an action moment where you don't know what happens and put it at the beginning. Now all of a sudden, my movie doesn't start in a slow way to where you're developing. It starts as a ticking clock. And by doing that one little brief moment at the beginning of my movie, now changed the whole feeling of the beginning of the movie. And that's when we felt like, okay, now we have the movie that I want to show the audience.
Mm-hmm. Now, hand in hand with that, at what point did you bring in Frederick and have him work on a score? Because when you're moving your visual imagery that much, going back and forth and back and forth, I can't imagine that you already had him scoring at that point, because everything would have had to have been shuffled.
All right, another guy that wanted to kill me, Freddie has been on every one of my movies. I've been very loyal to him on everything I do, and I will not use anyone else.
He's fantastic.
Freddie understands me. Yeah, he is amazing. He works with every genre, but what's great about him, he knows that I'm crazy, and he knows that if I overthink something, that I'll go in for a major breakdown and change. And that's what happened, is that Freddie comes in on every one of my movies in pre-production. He comes in at pre-production. We start talking about it. Then when I get the rough cut, he does a complete score on it for me. Because when we deliver a movie to the studio, you know, we have to make sure that they understand what story we're telling through the music as well, through the score. And so then we delivered it. They loved it. Lionsgate loved the movie and said, great. And then all of a sudden, I started watching the movie like probably 30 times. And I call Freddie up and I go, "Buddy, we need to erase everything." I said, "I want to start all over." And he's, "Are you kidding me?" I go, "Yeah, it's from the beginning." He goes, "Why?" I go, "The music, the score is beautiful, but it's too strong. It's equal to the dialogue and equal to the movement of the characters." I said, "I want it to be eerie and subtle underneath them, where you're not sure you hear it, but your brain hears it, but not your ears hear it so much." And I said, "If we could do that throughout, and bury it a little bit more, but make it more, you know, kind of a moving motion," I said, "that's when we got it." And he did it. He went from beginning to end and recreated. He's done this movie 3 times. And I think what he pulled off in this last bit was unbelievable. It really told the story I wanted.
I really like the score that he did, Johnny. It fits the film so well. And it has that kind of mysterious, deep South, gothic South undertone to it, which works well for the mystery that's unfolding. Because it's a mystery that we have unfolding here for a good part of the film. To why is Guy hiding? What is he doing? Why does he never shower? You know, all of these fun things. So
he stays in the pond.
That's it. That's why you had to have a location with a creek and a pond.
I did. I used that creek as a barrier. And everyone said, "Well, Johnny, he's too wide open." I go, "No, that's his barrier. That's his moat that he has that no one can get through to him."
I loved watching this so much, Johnny. Job so well done. So I have to ask you, do you have a favorite moment in this film of which you're most proud?
Yeah, it's something the trailer didn't show, and that would be that we got to show the gadgets that me and Josh worked for 2 years on to build the best gadgets that we possibly could. Those were all built by us, you know, and we tested them all, and the trailer didn't show what a genius he truly is. And when we got to pay that off at the monastery and to show the audience what they were, that's why when we showed the beginning of the making of it, you know, you have to pay that off. And that was probably the funnest scene, to finally get to the point of paying these things off.
You took MacGyvering something to a new level, let me tell you.
That's terrific. I love this interview. Thank you.
So well done, Johnny. I can't wait to see what you bring us next.
Well, hopefully it might be Off the Grid Part 2.
I would love to see Off the Grid Part 2.
We're ready to go.
I would love to see that. Johnny, thank you so much. This has been so fun getting to talk with you about Off the Grid, and I hope we get to do it again in the future.
I do too. Thank you for enjoying this movie.
Thank you, Johnny. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.